welcome to The Smoke Break. I'm your host, your old pal Zane, here with Zoe Schwartz.
Hello.
And comedian G Wade.
What's going on?
We're going to do a real quick disclaimer, and that is this podcast is for entertainment purposes only. We work in the field of mental health, but don't claim to be professionals within this space. Our intention is to have conversations around lived experience. And as a result, we may not always agree or disagree with everything our guests say, but we do intend to hold open space for conversations and learning from one another. That's basically it.
He'll have it memorized soon.
Yeah, we'll get it. We'll get it memorized. So let's talk about it. This week we're gonna talk about trust. So
yeah.
Trust is something that I feel like is built over time. It's something that, you know, I think everybody wants, but I think we also have to have an understanding that, like, you know, it takes some time to build up.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What's something that helps you build trust with either somebody or maybe even multiple people?
I think trust is something that you have to let yourself go. So it's hard to build it. Like, right. Everybody starts off on a even plane with me. Like, I don't know if I can trust you or distrust you by meeting you. I can only have a conversation and build off of that. And I think trust is connected to loyalty and betrayal. Right. Mm-hmm. They're like cousins. There's a fine line between the both of them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I can only expect somebody to be loyal to me or betray me. Somebody can only betray me if I expect them to be loyal to me. Mm. And then it also goes with how I expected them to be loyal.
And if you trusted them in the first place.
And if I trusted them in the first place, right?
Yeah.
So you have that give and take with loyalty and betrayal. And then that's how you know what I'm saying? You figure out how you can trust people.
Yeah.
Because you can't. Trust comes in a whole bunch of different ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, and I think that even speaks to the idea that, like, there might be things that you can trust some people with, but you might not be able to trust them with everything.
Right.
You know?
Now, there's some people that I trust them with my life, like, to protect me. And, you know what I'm saying? If I'm in a space where, you know, I know, like, I'm going to be wild and not really paying attention, I trust them. But then I wouldn't trust them with my bank account.
Yeah,
like, you know
I would trust them to do my taxes.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It was different.
You trust different people in different ways.
Exactly.
Well, and that makes me think about boundaries, right? Like we have, even though we trust somebody, you can have boundaries, which allows you to know which areas are safe to trust them in, right? Kind of?
Yeah. No, I definitely agree
that's a good
with
point.
That.
I hadn't thought about it like that.
Well, and I think that, like, setting boundaries and, like, you know, it's because I feel like trust is almost like an expectation, you know, and expectations are, you know, we've talked about those a little bit in the past where, like, that can kind of be a tricky area. Mm-hmm. But it's like, I think trust is almost like an expectation with, like, proof.
But it's like a value too, maybe, right? Like, it's even deeper than an because it's almost like required in order to have a healthy relationship.
But you have to trust people to be them. You know what I mean? It's people that I know, you know. I got a big family and the different walks of life, and I trust some of my, you know what I mean, my cousins or, you know, some family members that they might be on dope, they might be on, you know what I'm saying, whatever. I trust them to be them. You know, I know you might steal from me, which is cool, but I still, you know what I mean, I'll pull up on you if you call me at 2:00 in the morning and I need, you know what I'm saying, some help and a place to sleep. I'm gonna pull up on you. I'll get you a hotel. I can't bring you to the house though, because I know what happens when you know what I'm saying, when you do that.
Yeah.
So trust is a wide range and a wide way of thinking about it and you know what I'm saying, portraying it to the world.
Yeah, definitely. Who's somebody that you feel like you've been able to, like, build trust with?
That's a lot of people I've been able to build trust with. I mean, in a lot of different realms. You know, you got the comedy realm that I'm in. You know what I mean? I built trust with, you know, we started The Hub. It's a fraternity of comics.
Tell me a little bit about that.
It's brand new, something that we started, and we started it probably about 5 months ago, and it's Pacific Northwest comics right now.
Okay.
So us from Portland, we got some folks from Tacoma, and we rock with each other. So I have to trust them to do their job up there.
Yeah.
You know, because I can't be in Seattle or Tacoma and those areas all the time, and they trust us to do our job down here. They can't be in Portland all the time. So when it comes to shows and that kind of thing, we trust that everybody has the best interest for everybody else at heart.
Yeah.
So, and also, you know, we all are also solo comics. So it's not like, you know, we're not a group of comics that do everything together.
Right. Yeah.
We do a lot of stuff together, but at the same time, we're still solo comics. So I still book shows and I do what I do, and they book shows and do what they do.
Yeah.
But then we also come together and put that, you know what I'm saying, those resources in a pot and say, what can we do with it? So I got to trust that everybody is being honest in that aspect too.
Yeah. Well, and I think, like, too, is, you know, like you were talking about, like, trusting people to do their job, you know, like, that's such a difficult thing, because it's like, I feel like sometimes people have like this wiggle room where it's like, you could fuck this off, but I need to trust that you won't.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know? So it's like, I think that, you know, like out like through time, through like, you know, almost like proving that like, hey, I can be a trustworthy person. Cause like, I agree with you. Cause I'm very much, that's a lie. That's not, that's a lie. I had to recognize that. As I said,
didn't even say it.
Well, I was going to say that like, I everybody's like medium for me until they like either give me a reason not to trust them or a reason to trust them. I feel like my problem is that like I go from a place of not trusting people to like a maybe I can trust them.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's tricky because it doesn't give people a fair shake, you know, yeah. Because I think for me, like not trusting people is what makes me feel safe. But like that safety that like I'm trying to preserve, you
know. That's learned behavior though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So me personally, I grew up in a very trusting environment. I grew up with my mom and my two sisters in the household, and I grew up in a trusting environment. So I'm kind of the opposite of you.
Okay.
Sometimes I trust people too much.
I was going to say, I feel like I'm on that side too.
Really? Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Well, I feel like I've just had too many people who like have great ideas, you know, but it's like if they don't show me that that's what they want to do, if they don't show me that that's how they're going to show up, then it's like I'm like, well, I mean, you know, maybe I should just assume that most people aren't going to show up. And it's like something that I've been learning a lot about is just like taking a part and assuming that it's the whole. So it's like taking one or two people that I can't trust and assuming that I can't trust everybody when it's like, that's not necessarily true.
I was just thinking about how that's not exactly right off what you were saying, thinking about how it sucks when you like really care about somebody, but then something happens that like shows you that you can't trust them. Mm-hmm. Because I have people like that in my life where I'm just like, man, I really like you, but there's just one thing, like, you know, you did something dishonest.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, and then it's just like, it just fucks up the whole friendship for me. Like, and it bums me out when that happens. And I mean, what you were saying earlier about like, certain people, you have certain types of boundaries, you know, you're like, you know, certain types of trust with, and I'm trying to navigate that, like, because I think I have a tendency to like if I love you and I feel connected to you, then like I want to give you the benefit of the doubt. It feels good to me to give people the benefit of the doubt. Yeah. And it sucks when you realize you can't, but then you're like, I still love you. It just, yeah, it's tricky. Like that's something I've come across recently, because I will really like stop wanting to be around someone because you don't feel safe when you don't trust someone, you know.
But learned behavior isn't a bad thing, I don't think, either, because it helps you identify different traits in different people, right? Because a lot of us, we have some similar traits and we have some traits that aren't similar, right? So I think when you grow up with that, learning who to trust and who not to trust, and if you have that distrusting spirit, then it helps you discern between people that you can and you can't, you know what I mean? Yeah, can't trust.
But it's like, but I was just thinking about how like having that, like you said, you grew up in a trusting environment. I feel like people that don't grow up in trusting environments, like it's almost like they can't, like maybe, I don't know if that's your experience at all, but like maybe it's like, it's like you can't give people the opportunity to prove it to you because it doesn't feel safe, you know, because you didn't have that like base of like, I can trust the people that are around me taking care of me, you know, like as a child. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I'd like to speak to that. Like in my experience, you know, like I love my mom to death, but like she would promise things that she wouldn't come through on. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I would create this expectation that like, well, you said it, so I can trust you. Mm-hmm. And then when she didn't follow through on it, it became like, okay, so like, does this mean that like from now on I shouldn't trust you? Does this mean confusing. That in this situation you might have fallen through and I can still trust you? It's you know, I think it's really confusing.
Well, I think that happens, especially as parents, because you want to do something that you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, the intentions.
Yeah, I tell my kid like a lot, like, okay, we're going to do this, but then life comes up and it's like, we really can't.
Yeah. Right?
And I got my 9-year-old daughter. She's the one that holds my feet to the fire when it comes to that. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, we're going to go to Sky Zone, or we're going to do this on, you know, this day. And then it's like, oh shit, your brother has basketball games. We can't do that. Not this week. You know what I'm saying? So then it's like, you know, you got to make it up to them. But at the same time, it's a kid. So they're not really thinking about like, oh, right or wrong, or you know what I'm saying? Like the bigger picture of like, hey, there's other kids in here we got to take care of too. They just think about it in the sense of themselves.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of times that comes with, you know, but they can trust me to take care of them. Mm-hmm. They can trust me to, you know what I'm saying, make sure they have clothes, food, and you know what I mean? Great, trust me to, you know, show up for them when they're having issues at school. They can trust me to, you know what I mean, to coach for them and, you know, all the other stuff. But at the same time, I might fall short sometimes when I do say, we're going to do this, but then we don't have the opportunity crashes and they don't understand that.
Yeah.
That just made me think about though, like, but probably like just like mistakes or like, you know, like I think it's really important for parents to like be able to acknowledge when they make a mistake. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's a really important lesson. So I think like maybe there's something different about like saying you're going to do something and then like not addressing it versus being like, yo, I fucked up. I planned too many things, but like I acknowledge your feelings. We'll do it next week. You know, like maybe you're doing that versus like a parent where they say something, they don't follow through on it, and then they don't have a conversation. Yeah. So you just, there's like that, like you can still have trust even if you don't do everything you say you're going to do, as long as you communicate about why you did it and like acknowledge the experience for the person who didn't get their expectations met. Right. Like I think that's, so it's not about being perfect as a parent, right?
Right. You can't be perfect.
Being
as a parent.
Open, though,
no
like
such
that.
Thing as a perfect parent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and I think like even like the acknowledgement helps build trust, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's like if you leave me hanging but don't acknowledge that you left me hanging, then it's like I feel like I've been harmed and it, like it just never got talked about.
Yeah.
Right. You know, but if you say like, hey, I realize how I fell short for you and like I want to show up for you differently in the future, like that, even if you let me down, you still showed up for me in a way that like we can start rebuilding that trust.
Yeah. My bad. Kid. Let me tell you why that didn't happen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But then it's up to them to understand because sometimes they don't.
Well, but that's like realistic too, because that's how life is going to be. Like they're like people are going to say stuff and it's not going to happen. And like you want to prepare your children to have like the resiliency to like navigate imperfect relationships, imperfect interactions, how to decide when someone's safe to trust, how, you know, how to decide when a mistake is forgivable versus like threatening your safety or like it's not a healthy relationship, you know? So I think there's nuance around it and you're teaching them that by not being perfect. Yeah. Cause I think if you did everything you ever told your kid was going to, then they'd grow up and be a dick and expect everybody to
follow through.
Yeah. And to never make mistakes or forget or, you know, and that's not a realistic expectation of the world.
Yeah, exactly.
So what do you think has allowed your kids to like trust you in the way that they do?
I don't know. I protect them in a way and I try to make up for the mistakes that I do make. So if I do make that kind of mistake, then it might be a spontaneous, like, hey, we're not doing nothing today. Let's go to Sky Zone. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because I just told you we was going to Sky Zone last week and it didn't happen.
Yeah.
I didn't have a time or a frame where we could go, but now you're not doing nothing today. Come on, let's go.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? You just take them or, you know, when it comes to, you know, I don't know, the new shoes or whatever. And then also, I coach my kids.
Okay. Coach them how?
In sports and life and all that, in that kind of way. They trust me because of the information, the love and the substance that I do give them.
You give them good, the input is helpful. So they're like, this person's looking out for me. Like you're teaching them useful information.
Right.
Yeah.
Skills. And I show up when it means something. Like, you know, my daughter was having an issue at school where two kids were bullying her, right? And she come home and talk about it. Okay, I'm gonna talk to your teacher.
Yeah.
And me and her teacher email first and no result. Still doing it. Okay. Well, now we'll have a parent teacher conference. And then I'll go and I'll talk to the teacher and the counselor and then we'll figure it out. So showing up for them in the times that really matters, other than just the fun times of we get to go do something fun, I think that helps with the trust as well, you know.
Yeah. Well, and I think that like it's building consistency, you know.
Yeah. Oh yeah, consistency is a part
consistency,
of it.
I feel like really helps build trust because it's like if you show up for me one time and like never again, then like I'm going to remember the never again more than I will the time that you did show up. But if you show up most of the time and you let me down one or two, I'm gonna remember that you showed up most of the time.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's people in general too though.
Mm-hmm.
But you can have relationships where you know, it could be, you can show up all the time and then at one time it might be the mistake that somebody can't deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And then that might be the break of the trust altogether right there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then it takes a long time to build up that trust again in that situation. Like, you know, I got another daughter, she's 14 and you know, she is wild. I love her to death because she's fucking crazy. but she'll just do, you know what I mean, certain things to break the trust or the, you know what I mean, the trust that we have. And then it takes a while. I tell her all the time, it takes a while to build that back up.
Yeah.
Once you steal,
yeah.
Then it takes somebody a long time to trust you again with certain things. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
Well, I mean, something, and I'll let you get back
to it. Doesn't matter.
It does matter, Zoe. But yeah, something that like I had seen recently, just like through a couple of different sources, like one was like a trauma-informed care thing, but it was like, it made the case that like if after you've hurt somebody or traumatized them or done something in that way, it takes like basically like 10 consecutive positive experiences before they can start feeling like they can trust you. So like they can feel
like
safe.
Physiologically trust you. Like,
yeah, yeah, absolutely. And another person I had heard say, you know, like it takes about like 2 years of like you consistently showing up mm-hmm. and being like, I can be a trustworthy person. I realize mm-hmm. that like I faulted in this way, but like I think that consistency is the thing that like really starts building that back.
I think a lot of it too is communication.
Mm-hmm. Right? Absolutely.
Like yeah. when you break a trust, and it takes a certain amount of communication to come back together of like, okay, mm-hmm. I have to be open. I have to be honest about this thing that I, you know what I mean? That I kind of faltered on this betrayal that you had, right?
Yeah.
Because you're expecting to be loyal in this way. And so in order to trust you again, I have to now open up about, you know, the whatever it is that I'm going through or whatever mm-hmm. it is that's making my mind think the way that I'm thinking, because you expected me to be this way. And then I was this way.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes it's like, you might not even see it as a betrayal.
Right.
Because
right.
In your heart, you know what I mean?
It wasn't just, intentional.
You were
whatever.
Leading with love. It wasn't intentional.
Yeah.
And so now it's like, okay, I didn't understand that about you.
Mm-hmm.
And now you didn't understand that about me. So now how do we come back together?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I appreciate that. That was perfect. All right. We're going to take a real quick break and we'll be right back with the smoke break. And welcome back to The Smoke Break. I'm your host, Joel Pal Zane, here with Zoe Schwartz.
Hi.
And G Wade.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Finger guns all around.
You didn't do them this time, did you?
I didn't do them this time. I'll get you on the last one. Oh. Hold me to that. I got to build trust.
I love finger guns, man.
They're so much fun. They're so much fun. But yeah, on this part, on this section, we want to talk a little bit about safety. I feel like safety is something that, you know, it's a feeling that we get through trust, I feel like, in mm-hmm. my experience.
Mm-hmm.
What about in your experience? What's your experience with like feelings of safety and, you know, its impact on how you move in a, you know, community?
Safety is something that I hold dear because I'm usually the person who provides the safety, mm-hmm. right? In a lot of different situations. I mean, I spent 10 years in the military.
Mm.
Life is, you know what I'm saying, different. But at the same time, it's a thin line between protecting someone and then making a mistake.
Mm. What do you mean by that?
I've made mistakes in my life. Like, So, in the midst of protecting people, I have killed people in a way, if that makes sense. I mean, not in a way, but in real life. So it's one of those ones, right? So you think you're pulling up because you want to protect somebody.
Right.
And then somebody does something that threatens everybody in a different kind of way.
Yeah.
And then maybe your presence being there is what made them do that, because I'm a big guy, man. When I walk into a room, people get terrified.
Right.
And so I had an instance 2 years ago where I was protecting my cousin. Mm-hmm. And in the midst of me protecting my cousin, I got a gun pulled on me.
Mm-hmm.
So when that gun got pulled on me, my gun came out. And then now we're shooting, right?
Right.
And so in that instance, it's like, man, what if I never would have been there, right? What if I never would have showed up in that instance?
Right.
Would it have been different because I have an intimidating stature?
Right.
Or would it be, you know, or you know, would it have been cool?
Would it have been cool? But like, you know, you also have to take into consideration, would it have been less safe? You know, like, would it have been less safe had you not been there?
Right. And that's the thing. Like, yeah. And so, and it was also a family member of mine. So it was, it fucks with you in that kind of way. Right.
Absolutely.
So yeah. And I talked to his dad. When his dad pulled up, his dad came and was like, make sure he comes to the house. I said, I'm gonna make sure he comes to the house.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Talking to his sister, which is my cousin. He's my cousin. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, through marriage, but it's my cousin, right?
Right.
Talking to him. And then I don't know what transpired to make him flip in that kind of way.
Yeah.
But it did flip in that kind of way.
Right.
And so it's also dealing with the aftermath of it, because now it's something I have to deal with through life, right?
Yeah.
Because now it's my wife's first cousin.
Right.
It's my kid's cousin. It's, you know what I'm saying? My cousin I'm talking about is one of my best friends, you know what I'm saying, in the world. I just pull up on her and talk to her, but it's her brother.
Yeah.
And so how do you then, now you have to deal with that because you got to see them every day, all the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And yeah. And his birthday just passed 2 days ago. So
yeah
March 9th. So yeah, it's hard to deal with in that kind of way. But safety is one thing that I know I have to provide for my family, because who else is?
Right. Well, I think that safety is like, it's such an important thing. And it's like, it's like one of our base needs, you mm-hmm. know, like we have to feel safe, you know? Yeah. And like the feeling of safety is like something that I think you were talking about was like dysregulation. You know?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about that. Is like, you know, when we don't feel safe, how do we react?
Well, yeah, I was just thinking about how like, when we feel safe is like how our brains can like be regulated, you know, and then when we don't feel safe, our brains go into like, you know, fight or flight or whatever, where we're not be able to access like all the logical parts of our brain. We're only able to access like certain parts that are like, you know, activating. And I think like it's interesting how I feel like we're like almost like in the world that we live in today, it's almost like it backfires on us because it's like if we're not regulated and we don't feel safe, then we're not really able to like fully analyze the situation. And so that's what's like tricky about in a situation like that where you become activated and then it's like you're the amount of time you have to make a decision, you know, all those things. So I just think it's interesting how like the way our brains work, like can kind of backfire on us sometimes in that way. But I do think that, safety has a lot to do with like people being able to be their full selves, you know, because I think we can't like just like I was saying, you can't access all of your brain and you can't really be fully like aware of all your senses. And, you know, so I think safety is like a really it's like for our health, too. Right. Because when we're constantly in that state, like we have those stress hormones coursing through us. And, you know, so I think safety has a lot to do with like our well-being and our actual physical health, too.
Yeah, well, I don't think I have a high level like me personally. I don't have a high level of stress. But when danger comes, it's literally like a sometimes just muscle memory.
Yeah.
Right. Because I've been in a lot of that
military experience. It's like
a lot of situations where it's just muscle memory. This is what we, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. This is what has to happen.
Yeah.
And anytime you see a gun pulled on you, then muscle memory.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Especially being trained.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that, you know, like I work with, you know, like the houseless community. And a lot of times, like these are people who have like been in almost like a constant state of like feeling unsafe, you know, like whether it was they felt unsafe at home, they feel unsafe on the street, you know. It's like something that like somebody brought up to me is like you know, like using meth is like it for some people creates a feeling of safety because they're able to stay awake through the night, you know. Like there's people fucking with you, there's people trying to steal your shit, there's cops popping around, you know what I mean? There's all these different factors that it's like understanding how somebody tries to create a feeling of safety.
Well, and that it's relative too, right? Like I think, and it makes me think of like some word that I've heard or like a saying that I've heard people say before, like safety for who? Like, because sometimes safety can be weaponized, right? Like I don't feel safe. Like, people, like, we know how that gets weaponized, right?
Yeah.
Like
usually white women.
I was just going to say, you know where I'm going with this. Yeah, exactly. So like, so I think, and like even something you said made me think about too, like when I was working with houseless people as well. And like something I learned from people sharing with me is that like we think like, oh, being housed means safe, right? But for some people don't feel safe housed because they're so used to being outside and they've developed a way to feel safe outside. Yeah. And also, I mean, there's community involved in that conversation too, but even just some people like sleeping inside didn't feel safe, you know? So it's just like safety is super relative. And like you said, we kind of create our own safety based on what situations we're in and what we can do. And it means something different in one scenario versus another and one lifestyle versus another, you know? Yeah. So I think that's an important thing to consider is that like other people's safety isn't going to be your safety. And and that can cause a lot of conflict, right? Like, because we need to feel safe, like evolutionarily feel like we do. Yeah. So we can really misunderstand one another. And like, even in the example you gave, like, I think that is right. Like, it's like one person, he probably felt unsafe in some way, you know, whether it was logical or not. And like, it's just two people trying to feel safe. And then one person's safety can disrupt someone. You know, it's just really
complicated. It's two people trying to feel safe, but at the same time, like, I'm looking out for the safety of everybody in this house.
Well, for sure. Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
The reason why I'm here is because I got called to come over here because the kids, nobody felt safe.
No, yeah, I'm
and
sure.
So now it's time to come in. You know what I'm saying? And
but
so,
just in his mind, right? Yeah. Like, safety is part of what he's trying to create, too. But it's tricky because it's like, well, how, with safety for the greater number of people is what you were, right? So it's like, it's just.
Well, and I think even just like that context of like, you know, two people trying to feel safe, you know, like the way that we go about that might be differently, but it's like, I feel like when we feel unsafe that it's like, it's almost like a desperation thing, you know?
Right. It's not
like,
always rational either. I think that's what I was kind of getting at. Yeah. Like it's not always based in reality.
But it's just different. The safety for him was me being there was also safety for him because I'm also looking out for you.
Right. Because he could.
So I'm like, hey
people.
Man, let's grab your stuff and just put it in the car. Yeah. I'll take you to your dad's house. Let's go. Like you can put stuff, but you know,
totally. Yeah,
let's deal with this. And then come back tomorrow, man. This ain't the end of it. Mm-hmm. This is just a time where, you know, nobody feels safe around you right now.
Oh, yeah.
You're wilding out, bro. You're really wilding. Let's go. And at the same, like, you know, because we had a relationship. I trust you. You know what I mean? We can kick it.
Yeah.
We play chess together. Sometimes I pull up after a comedy show, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and he'd just be chilling. I'm chilling. I come over, you know what I'm saying, a couple of people, and we'll play a game of chess while everybody else is, you know, drinking and having a good time, and we just vibing, right? Yeah. And so we have those kind of, that kind of relationship. So was, I'm safe. I'm here for your safety,
yeah,
too.
Totally, yeah, totally.
Right? And so, like, but let's move this to another place because these kids don't feel safe.
Yeah.
Right.
Your sister don't feel safe. Nobody feels safe in this house right now with you in it. So how about we just, and then 2-3 days later, a week, let it go by. Stay at your dad's house. A week go by. Hey, I'm about to come back.
Yeah.
Life would have been easy.
What role do you think that like predictability plays in safety?
I think experience is the only thing that you can use to predict unsafe environments, right? Okay. So for me, I don't really think about emotional safety like that, right? So like, because some situations are just emotionally dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody is talking to you or you know, treating you in a way where you don't feel safe by words or actions or whatever they're doing.
Right.
But me, I'm more focused on like actual physical safety.
Yeah.
So, you know, being a comic and going around doing it, you know what I mean? Whatever we do, like sometimes we do shows in Baltimore, in DC, the DMV area. We're doing quite a bit. And I got a cousin who lives in Baltimore. And every time I go out, I like to wear slides. I'm not wearing slides today, but I like to wear slides.
I know that about you.
You can't wear slides out here, bro. You don't ever know when you got to run or blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. I'm like, man, I'm safe everywhere I go. I'm not worried about none of that.
Yeah.
Like, if somebody got a problem with me, they got a problem with me. I'm a very personable person, even though I'm big, whatever.
Right.
Somebody might be more aggressive. And I know that people are going to be more aggressive
right.
when they talk to me if they, you know what I mean? If they feel like
maybe they're threatened, you know? Right. Like, oh, this is a big cat. Like, does this mean that, like, I'm in danger?
Right. If we're in conflict, I know. It's the chihuahua effect.
Yeah,
that's what I call it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Somebody smaller than me, they're going to bark louder and be, but then I'm also be, I just stay cool. Hey, man, look, what are we talking about, man? It ain't that deep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want a drink? Come on, come sit down and talk to me for a minute. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And we can have a conversation, and usually it calms the situation down to where people aren't in a heightened state of.
Yeah. Well, it also sounds like you build a feeling of safety, you know.
I do my best.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, as a comic, that's what I want to do, man. I'm here to make you laugh. I'm not here to have an issue. Like at the end of the day.
Exactly.
I'm here to bring joy to the world. I try to at least, you know.
Yeah.
But I think that's cool though to think about that, like somebody coming at you in like an aggressive way potentially and thinking about it from the perspective of like, how do I make this person doesn't feel safe. That's why they're being aggressive.
Yeah.
How do I help this person know that they are safe so then we can all be safe?
Yeah.
Right? Like, I think that's an interesting way to think about it too.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
you're showing the person like, hey, the violence isn't needed in this situation because you're safe, I'm safe. But you know, chances are they didn't realize that. And that's why they were puffing up or whatever.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I do my best to do that. Even in that situation, we talked for an hour, probably a little bit more. I don't know. We talked and just tried to, you know what I mean? Come down and let them know everything is good. It's just not that, you know, right now, not the time for you to be here. Let's, you know what I mean? Figure it out. And then it turned into something different.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
What's Zoe, I wanted to ask you the same question. What role do you think that predictability has in feelings of safety?
Well, I mean, I think like it's kind of in the same way we were talking about consistency. Like I think people have to repeatedly experience somebody being safe in order to, you know, to trust that it's real. You know what I mean? Like
right.
it's built over, like how you're saying it was built over time. So I think that's kind of how I think about consistency plays to it is that like, yeah, like people have to show up for you more than once before you're going to be like, this person has my back. Like, I mean, obviously if someone shows up to you, like, you know, there's also like things are weighted heavier sometimes, right? Like sometimes people show up for you in a much bigger situation and that might carry more weight. You might make a bigger judgment about them based on that. But yeah, I think it's part of helping people feel safe, part of people learning to trust you is being a consistent person, showing and like sort of showing people like, what can you rely on me for? It's also part of how we decide what people we can trust and what areas we trust the people in, right? Is by consistently seeing their behavior and being like, okay, when it comes to this, like, I don't want this person at my house, but I care about them. And if they need me, I'll show up and give them a meal or a room to sleep in or whatever. But because of what I need for my, So I think it helps you learn what safety looks like in that particular relationship. Yeah.
But in the same aspect of that type of situation is takers recognize givers, right? And so you can be that person that's a real big giver. And takers, they will just continue to take. mm-hmm. and take yeah. and take and take. And so in a lot of those situations, sometimes it's like, well, I can't give you what you want right now.
Yeah.
And some people expect that because you've been given for so long.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And then that will cause a conflict. And you know what I mean? So now I don't feel safe because you're not giving me what I want.
Yeah.
No, that's not how that works.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. That's how like the consistency thing could be twisted around on you. Yeah, right. Totally.
Definitely. That's interesting. I think for me, the tie between like predictability and safety is like, I feel like that's oftentimes why people are avoidant of people with mental health issues. You know, mm-hmm. like you see that person screaming in the street, that person, I don't know what they're going to do. Yeah. So now I feel unsafe. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, so are you actually unsafe or do you just not... Can you not predict what's going to happen?
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
like,
yeah.
is that like, is this person actually unsafe or is it like you just feel like you can't guess their next move?
You're just not familiar. Yeah. Yeah. You, right. you don't know what to expect. That's.
So and
I don't think you can ever guess anybody's next move. You can be in a situation to where you like, okay, this is the most probable, mm-hmm. but you can never guess anybody's next move. I did not expect a gun to come out. I did not expect to get shot at that day. I expected it to be, you know what I mean? One of those situations where, we can talk to, hey, come on. And then we'll go to his dad's house, sit down, have a beer, and you know what I'm saying? Just chop it up about whatever, what the conflict was and how to resolve it.
Yeah.
That's my thing. I always want to get to the resolution of things. I never want to get to the point where I don't like fighting.
Yeah.
Right? I grew up fighting like my whole life. So right now I'm at a point, and I've been at this point since an adult, of like confrontation and fighting is the last thing that I want to do.
Right.
Right. But then also have an aggression to me where, you know, I go to the gym and I want to get it out that way. I'd rather punch an inanimate object or, you know what I'm saying,
have a safe environment to get that aggression out.
To get that aggression out, because I'm naturally an aggressive person.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I'd rather get it out somewhere other than people.
Absolutely.
You know what
Absolutely.
I mean?
Well, hey, I really appreciate you feeling safe enough to share that with us.
So, yeah, totally. Yeah,
I really appreciate that. All right, we're going to take a real quick break, and we will be right back with the Smoke Break. And welcome back to the Smoke Break. I'm your host, Joel Palzane, here with Zoe Schwartz.
Hello.
G. Wade.
Yep.
All right, on this next section, we wanted to talk about role models and role modeling. Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, when we're younger, we have people that we look up to, and even sometimes when we're older. What's been the impact of role models in your life?
That role models have been a big impact. I grew up without a father.
Okay.
So I kind of makeshifted a father throughout all my mentors and coaches and those type of, you know what I'm saying, figures in my life. And so I think that is one way that I kind of makeshift the way that I parent now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so role models are so, I think they're, in some cases, they're kind of more important than parents sometimes, because I was able to talk to a lot of my coaches, my role models, and my mentors about things I couldn't talk to my mother about.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
Because I wanted to be perfect for her as a kid. Mm-hmm. You know, you grow up, you want to be perfect for your parents. And so I think they play a very, very significant role. And I'm happy to be one now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm mentor and coach and you know what I mean? And my role model to a lot of kids.
I like that you said that, you know, you didn't necessarily have a role model, so like you kind of like makeshifted, you know, one for yourself. I feel like that was similar to my experience, where it was like, you know, I felt like I was being let down at home, so it's like, who do I look to be you know, like that guiding star of like, you know, who do I want to be when I grow up? Like, I love my mom to death, but like, I don't necessarily want to be her when I grow up.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like a lot of like my role models were, you know, in media, because it was like I was an only child, you know, like I didn't have access to a lot of people. So it was like, what am I watching? Who am I watching? How are they showing up? I think just having like a general idea, because it's like, this is going to sound weird, I guess, but it's like, it's almost like that what would Jesus do thing, you know, where it's just like, what would my role model do? You know, what would Captain America do in this situation?
Right.
Where I'm just like, look at, you know, I'm just like trying to like navigate the world. And it's just like, sometimes we kind of have to like say, like, I don't know how I would handle this, but how would somebody who I look up to handle this?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Captain America might. Sorry.
Captain America wasn't the best
one. I'm like,
one.
I don't know if that's realistic.
He's on my shirt, so like he's the first one. But like,
Zane's like, I just never lived up to my role model. I don't know why. He was a superhero.
It was music
Zane, that's
for
why.
Me, man.
Yeah, it was music for you. You found your
music
role models
for me.
In music.
Yeah, especially too. Like hip hop. Like, DMX, I think, was one of my role models. Which,
okay,
you know,
okay, yeah,
great. And then, you know, you got like Jay-Z, another somebody, you know what I mean, who helped raised me in a kind of way, E-40, just those kind of, you know, and then, I learned a lot from just listening to the, you know, the poetry that they had.
I mean, I feel like there's a lot of good lessons in hip hop, you know what I mean? Like, there's different things that, like, I piece together, you know, I would say even, like, my personality of, like, these little things that I hear that I'm just like, I want to take that with me, you know? Like, that's important to me. That's a value that I have that I didn't have words for.
Yeah, it was a storyteller for me. But every song I would listen to where somebody would tell a story, then I would just listen to the story. And, you know, you kind of eat the fish and spit out the bones in a way. Like, you take in what they say, but then the stuff that might not be, that you might not agree with or might not go, you know what I'm saying, with the values that you have, you kind of discard that, but then take, you know what I mean, the good in.
Yeah.
I like what you just said about how, wait, what did you say? You said
Captain America.
No, it was something about, values. I don't know what you said, but I like
Yeah,
it.
Like, you kind of get the values. You can pick little pieces from, like, artists and stuff and just like, oh, that's a value.
Oh,
that
a value that I didn't have words for. That's what you said. Yeah. And it made me think about how, like, music also, different types of art also can, like, put words to a feeling that you have that you don't have words for or that you didn't have a label for. I think that's a cool way that, like, we learn through, like, the art and the media that we ingest, you know, because music definitely, like, you know, when you hear somebody say something in a way and you're like, or like they could say it better than you could ever even say it in your own head, like about love or a lot of those, like, painful or strong emotions.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's a really cool thing about role models and just, like, things that we grow up listening to and taking in and you know, creating our understanding of the world through, you know?
R&B music for me too, though.
Yeah.
Okay. That was one of my older sisters used to put me on all the R&B, you know what I mean, singers and all the, And so, that was another one that helped me understand love and,
What about you, Zoe? What's been your experience with role models?
I don't know. I'm trying to think. I was thinking this whole time, like, who were my role models? And I mean, like, I guess, like, everybody that was older than me, you know what I mean?
But that's fair.
Like, what makes me think about, like, okay, so my sister that's closest in age to me is 3 years older than me. Like, I always wanted to be like, you know, because I was young and, like, that's pretty normal when you're, like, a little sister, you know? So I try to be like her, and she was kind of like into, like, punk rock and stuff, you know? So I went through, like, a punk rock phase when I was, like sixth, seventh grade. And then I discovered hip hop and I was like, oh, I don't, and she always gave me shit for wanting to be like her. Mm-hmm. And then once I discovered, and she was like, oh, now you're into rap. Like, she'd tease me about, and I was like, now I found who I am on my own. And you're going to make fun of that, you know?
Right.
But it's interesting because it did. Yeah. I do feel like once I got into hip hop, I was like, I think I'm more into this.
Yeah.
But I do think there's a lot of similarities between punk rock and rap, like, just as far as being, like, super, you know, like, counterculture and speaking about all these things, you know, like, I think it makes sense why I went from one of those to the other, but
so you found some of your role models, it sounds like, through, like, media as well.
Yeah, right? and like my family too, you know, like, having older siblings, definitely looked up to them, but I think I pretty quickly figured out, like, I don't think I'm exactly like them, you know? So I think I learned things from her, but I also learned, like, how I was different and, like, what my individuality looked like. So I think that's another interesting aspect of, like, just because someone's your role model doesn't mean that you emulate everything that they do. You might learn what you do and don't like based on the people that are modeling to you what life looks like beyond where you're at in life or whatever, you know?
So. And I think that's what everything, what you said, do and don't like, it was a lot that I would say my dad was a role model for me in a different kind of way because I got to choose what I liked and what I didn't like.
Yeah.
Right. And so my dad, he was heavy on drugs. He died of a heroin overdose when I was 13. Mm. So me looking at his life is like, oh, those are the things I don't want to do.
Yeah. So he was still a role model, even though.
You're still a role model. Yeah. You know what I mean? Regardless of how everything turned out, you're still a role model.
Yeah, he still helped shape you, even in good ways, even though maybe the example he was setting wouldn't have been perceived as a good example.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. That's a good point.
Well, and I like the thing you said earlier about eating the fish and spitting out the bones.
Yeah, I like that,
you
too.
Know? Because I think that speaks to just the realism that, like, there's no such thing as a perfect person. There really isn't, you know? And, like, we're going to find people who are more in line with our values, but, like, to find somebody who's 100% in line with everything, like, I think that's going to be a rarity. So it's like being able to say, I really like this part about you. I'm not as big a fan of this part, but, like, you are still in a way role modeling, you know, and helping me, you know, become a role model.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, what are the things that I saw that I didn't like that, like, if I thought someone were looking up to me, that I wouldn't want them to you know, also be that.
It's only been one time where somebody was able to
I understand why you reacted that way. There was a pop in the studio. I just want to address that. Go ahead.
To have a perfect role model. And that was, like, you know what I'm saying, with Jesus. But nobody knew what Jesus did from 13 to 30. Mm-hmm. Like, when he left home 13 to 30, unexplained.
Yeah.
Nobody could tell. So from 13, all the way to, he was 13, I guess, perfect kid. And then he left, came back at 30, and a perfect person.
Yeah.
But sometimes, you know what I mean, that we just didn't know his whole life. Maybe Jesus was wild to do whatever Jesus was doing. Who knows? You know what I mean? At the end of the day.
Yeah.
But came back and made whatever impact he made on the earth, because we're still talking about him 2024, 25 years.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I think that's a good example. It's just like, yeah, we don't know, you know, like the, we don't know every, like the entirety of everybody's story, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And like, I think the more that, you know, we kind of build ourselves, the more that we can, you know, like try to role model that to somebody else. So like, what's been your experience with like being a role model? Like your father, your coach, like what's been your experience of having people look up to you?
It's been interesting, man.
Yeah?
I think, yeah. Being a role model is different because I'm also a role model to a lot of my peers, right?
Sure.
And they're role models to me.
Sure.
So being that is having people look at you in a light and maybe they're not getting it correct.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like sometimes people will not expectations, but they will look at you in a way where you're like, look, man, I'm human too.
Mm. Yeah. Totally.
You know what
yeah,
I mean? So being absolutely a role model, sometimes people don't think you're not supposed to fail. You're not supposed to make mistakes. You're not supposed to.
Like you get you put know on a pedestal kind of.
Right. And it's like, look, man, don't put me on that pedestal. I'm a human like you.
Yeah.
I don't know everything. You don't know everything. That's fine. But we can go through this experience together. But when it comes to kids, it's really just learning their personalities, right?
Mm-hmm.
Being a coach, you're coaching several kids and all of them have their personalities.
Yeah.
But then also letting them, you know, letting them be them in a way like, I don't know what you went through today. You might have had a rough dad at school.
Yeah.
You might have had a rough dad home, you know what I mean? Different home lives, different things when it comes to coaching, you know, youth. And so I can't expect you to be everything I want you to be, or I can't expect you to just come in here and just shed all of that and just come and do it. No, sometimes I got to sit down and talk to you. Man, what's going on?
Yeah.
It's obviously something going on today because you're not being yourself. You can talk to me. Let me know. I'm not one of those. I mean, unless you're being abused or something like that, then I don't have anything to say. You can go through, you know, you can go through life. You can be angry at certain things, but you can talk to me about it too, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I think like, you know, role modeling that willingness to understand, you know, like I would say some of my biggest role models, like my current boss included, they make an effort to understand why I'm reacting the way that I'm reacting. And because they have done that for me, I also do that for like the people that I work with, you know, it's very easy to see somebody in a moment of stress and a moment of anger and a moment of sadness and just say, you know, you don't have a reason to be angry. You don't have a reason to be sad. You don't have a reason to be stressed, but like understanding how that stress and how that anger and how that sadness is impacting a person.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, not everybody's going to meet us with that energy. So just role modeling like that compassion for other people, I imagine is like, it's giving them something that they want to be like, I want to give that to somebody because I know how it felt when someone gave it to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Taking the time to see them. If you take the time to see people, then it becomes, then role modeling is just something that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, I don't intend, like, I never intended to be a role model. I never intended to be somebody,
right,
you know, but I always intend to take the time to see somebody. I don't care who you are, where you are. I'll meet you where you're at and have a conversation. If the conversation is in order, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
It makes me think about like the value of like being in community with people that maybe you don't always agree with everything they do. You know what I mean? Because I think like, just like we were saying, like you can learn from somebody what not to do, also what you want to do. Like being a role model doesn't mean that everything you do is going to be aligned. You know, it's like we can learn from what we don't agree with too,
or absolutely from
how we want to do something differently, or, you know, like, so I think, and I guess like it kind of holds the value of still learning from people that are different than you, or that might do things differently than you, because you can learn what you don't like, what you do like. Yeah. And not only surrounding yourself with people that agree with you too. I think like that's a value that is important, because we should see other people's experiences, other people, you know, so I think that's a cool thing too. To think about.
And we're in community with everybody.
Yeah.
Like,
regardless of what you think, if you think you got this small circle or whatever it is, your circle is much bigger than what you think, because everybody in the world is part of it in some kind of way. Right. In every kind of way. So everywhere you go, and everything that I do, I don't like to judge. That's one thing I don't do. Like, you know, if I see somebody on the street that's asking for a dollar, or if I see somebody who is a multi-billionaire, right? Mm. Y'all on the same boat. If I don't know you, you're in the same boat. At the end of the day, I don't care what you can bring or what you can do. Like at the end of the day, you're a person. You did whatever you did to get here. they did whatever they did to get here.
Yeah.
Who's like to say that. Who's right and who's wrong at the end of the mm-hmm. day? Because this person might like being outside. This mm-hmm. is what they want to do, right? Yeah. They don't mind it. This is their life that they want to live. Just because they're not living the life over here that people expect them to live doesn't make them any less of a person. You can
absolutely.
You can learn something from both, positive, negative, what to do, what not to do from both sides. And yeah. I think that's one thing in my life growing up and having the experience that I have, it led me to just talking to people, understanding everybody. I don't, yeah, I didn't yeah. give a fuck who you are.
Well, and I appreciate that perspective just because it's like, you know, you could easily look at, you know, somebody who's on the street and be like, you fucked up. That's how you got here.
Right.
You know, you could easily look at somebody who's a millionaire and be like, you did some fuck shit to get here. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? It's very easy to make these assumptions about these people. But like, I think that your willingness to hold them in the, both in the same regard and say that like, we are all equals, like genuinely, because right. I think that everybody has that, you know, I treat everybody equally. Bullshit. You don't. No. You don't. There's people who you look up to that you want to be like, and there's people who you think are below you that, you know, that you're like, I don't even look at them, you know, but it's like to actually hold everybody in the same regard and say that, like, at the end of the day, you're still a human. And like, that's the part of you that I connect with, I think is just, yeah, it's incredible.
And then, yeah, having it. And at the end of the day, until I build a relationship with you, how can I determine what type of person you are, right? Mm-hmm. And I tell this joke. I was in DC one time, and I did this show for this like DC dance music group or whatever, mm-hmm. and that shit lasted forever. So it's like 3:00 in the morning, and I'm just walking through the Alphabet District in DC and shit, just chilling. I didn't want to go to the hotel yet. I was still kind of wired, and I just see this dude yelling at this fucking statue, and he's arguing with the statue about like all the fucked up shit America has done to people, mm-hmm. and why this dude, I don't even know what statue, but why this dude is the reason. And I just sat there and I just looked. Like, mm-hmm. I'm just watching. I'm just listening. Like, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Because
he ain't wrong.
What he was saying was hella truth.
Yep.
Yeah. And then he kind of got mad at me. He looked over at me. He was like, now we got company. He talked to the statue. I was
like, felt.
Oh, my bad for fucking up this moment, man. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah. I think our willingness to like listen to everybody and just and hold everybody in the same regard as being on our level is yeah. I mean, You're a fucking amazing role model. I always appreciate having you on this show. Your kids are lucky to have you as a father. Yeah, the kids are lucky to have you as a coach. You're amazing. I appreciate you joining
us. We appreciate
you.
Absolutely. All right. Well, that has been The Smoke Break. I've been your host, Joel Palzane, here with Zoe Schwartz.
Bye.
G. Wade.
Take it easy.
We'll see you next time. Later, players.
Later, players. I like that.